The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. If you're listening, whoa.
Hey everybody, welcome to Reporting is Eligible. I am Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express. We just finished the bye week. We are playing against the 49ers again, a team that the Packers seem to play in the playoffs kind of a lot, and already have defeated once this year in a kind of weird game, but that's what we got. It's not a bad matchup. It is an interesting matchup because Matt LaFleur is a Kyle Shanahan guy. Fundamentally, these teams are similar in a lot of ways. And to help me preview it, getting angry at the Badgers in urban Wauwatosa, we have...
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter. Yes, an actual sports reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Pursuant to a conversation we had last week. Yes, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Indeed, double dosing here, watching the Badgers while talking Packers. And fun fact, Paul, I have been to San Francisco twice in the past calendar year. I have been to Green Bay once in the past calendar year. Do with that information whatever you want. It's completely useless, but an intriguing subplot is my San Francisco-ness this season.
Pretty surprising, actually. You've been there more in the last calendar year than I've ever been there, because I've only been to San Francisco once, and I really like the Pacific Northwest. Which San Francisco
wasn't entirely,
is kind of a part of.
Not entirely my choice to go back. It was more of a, we went in the summer and it was great. And the sister-in-law that we were visiting was like, hey, guess what? I'm getting married and it's going to be right around Christmas. So if you could just come back. And we did. And, it's a good time. There's some bridges, a lot of bridges, a lot of hills. A lot of hills. And their football team is decent. And I think I am in that camp of people who are a little bit scared.
I think
because
they're underrated, which we'll get into here. But I do think that the 49ers are better than a lot of Packer fans are giving them credit for. But I still think we'll win. So, also helping us preview the game, someone who I might actually see this weekend.
My name is Matt, but you can call me Matub, Acme Packing Company Meme Weaver, and general Twitter rabble rouser. The farthest west I have ever been in the United States is Gunnison, Colorado.
No, really? You've never been to Cali?
Never been to Cali. Never been west of Gunnison.
So huh. Interesting.
I've never... You know what's funny is Denver is just a monument to getting to the Rocky Mountains and just going, nah, never mind, and then stopping.
Which already, that's a good point, but you also are like already halfway out west. Like for you to go to California is not that hard, especially
sure, actually, what's funny is where I live in Colorado is exactly halfway between LA and where I lived in Michigan. Like exactly halfway.
Can I look? I don't mean to interrupt, but the Badgers just hit a beyond half court shot at the buzzer to end the first half. Like an absolute heave. I'm very excited. I'm trying to calm down. Keep talking to me about the West. Why isn't the gateway to the West, Matub, in Colorado? Why is it in St. Louis, Missouri? How did that work out?
Because it's harder to go over a mountain than it is to go over a river.
I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I'm trying to decide if I believe that. Okay, that's yes. I agree. We're good.
Yeah,
we're good. Yes. It wasn't processing in my head quite.
I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase "move mountains."
but we have four wheel drive now. Is the thing so?
better than Oregon Trail with a Conestoga. So yes,
you have died of dysentery. I definitely drove home from California. One of our trips, flew out, drove back, and saw a whole lot of Wyoming and Nevada. And there is a lot of Wyoming and Nevada in the world, and a fair amount of Utah. Rocky Mountains. I recommend at least one drive through the Rocky Mountains in your life, and then never, ever, ever again.
Can we all agree that there's too much Nebraska?
There's too much Nebraska. Oh,
heavens.
Nebraska's the
heavens
worst.
To Betsy.
I thought Iowa was the worst until we got to Nebraska. Nope. And then actually Iowa is quite beautiful once you are getting out of Nebraska. It's all relative.
Especially if you're going west through Nebraska, you pass the only two cities in Nebraska in the first 45 minutes, and then you just have 500 miles of nothing.
No respect for Kearney. No respect. Kearney's on the way.
Kearney is the sand crane capital of the world.
Intriguing. I did not know that. I stayed in Kearney on the way back from California.
Yeah, you cannot stay in Kearney, Nebraska during the sand crane migration season because literally every sand crane in the world stops there.
All right.
And it's just covered with bird watchers.
I had no idea that was the case.
I saw no bird watchers, and my car was not scathed by sandhill crane droppings, so I have a feeling I was not there at the right time.
So anyway, football.
Football. We're going to the playoffs.
We're going to the playoffs.
Playoffs.
We're already in the playoffs. The playoffs are underway. We get the 49ers who beat the Cowboys in just a despicable football game.
Did you say despicable? It was tremendous.
I mean, it was tremendous in the way that, like, the room is tremendous. Like that unintentional comedies are tremendous. It was tremendous in that way.
See, I think it was tremendous in the way that Rounders is tremendous, where it tries really hard to be good and ends up being bad.
Well, yeah, that is the room.
I should rephrase. The room would be like going to like a Pop Warner game. That's trying really hard
with a lot of money.
Rounders is a
big budget A-list movie. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
In the
and
past,
you end up with pay that man. He's miami.
In the past, I have tried to defend Mike McCarthy. I feel like he was given an overtly bad rap earlier than he deserved it. But somebody else made this point. He has an offensive coordinator who's considered very good. He has a defensive coordinator who's considered very good. In fact, he's getting apparently a ton of interviews for head coaching gigs. He has a president/general manager/overlord who is in control of the roster. If Mike McCarthy can't handle the like timing and the game flow, then I don't know what he does there. And just incredible that he found a way to interject himself into the narrative. And San Francisco almost found a way to give it back. It took some crazy circumstances for that game to even be a thing as long as it was. But like San Francisco almost blew it too.
Yep. Kyle's good at making plays up, but Kyle's not so good at game flow himself. And he will let you back in if you just give him a chance. And that's what happened there. Mm-hmm. It was the movable object versus the... Yeah, immovable force, I guess.
Thank you.
That's the destructible force. McCarthy should be getting so much. I mean, he is getting, but more crap for the punt, I think, than the run at the end, because the punt was like, what are you doing? Like, it's you can't screw that up. Nobody puts the punt unit on first down. I don't think ever happened before in the history of the league. Maybe during like a monsoon in 1918 it happened. But
have you heard the description there? Like what happened?
I have not heard the description of what happened. Weren't they trying to draw them off sides?
No, they fully intended to run a play with the punt team. They called it a turbo package. They had a play set up to run a play with the punt team. That's why.
But why?
I don't know. But they had an offensive play set up. But I guess someone, like the gunner or something, stepped off, and a ref considered that as a substitution.
So they were trying to stop the 49ers from subbing out their defense and running a play.
Yes, and they were trying to stop the Niners from subbing out their punt team, and they had a play like set up to run, like they were actually going to run a real play.
All right, but okay, that's it's That's less stupid than trying to draw them offsides.
It's less stupid, but it's still incredibly stupid to have a scripted offensive play where your punter is in the slot.
And you call that turbo? Your punter is in the slot? You call that turbo? Come on.
I think it was turbo. Don't quote me on that.
Here's the thing. If you don't have the element of surprise, the special teams return team will always stop the team with the punter as quarterback. Like, that's just...
slot.
It's not a good idea. It's a bad idea. Well, you shouldn't do
it. I assume the long snapper was quarterback if the punter's in the slot. Let's go!
Whoever's playing quarterback is not an NFL quarterback, so they're not going to run a successful play.
Okay, I'm watching the play right now. And so their special teams coordinator... Yes. Okay, so they were going to set up, and then a ref holds out a hand to show that people are subbing, and then the special teams coordinator is losing his mind, going, no, just come off! Just come off! And so they've got, I don't know, I think it's like CeeDee Lamb lining up at quarterback, and then literally their punter is in the slot. Like they had a real formation and everything, but a gunner stepped off on accident and they considered it a sub.
I feel like it's one of those things that is way outside the box, too far outside the box, where it just is going to look stupid. But I will say this, if what you're describing works, and it does, even if it yields any positive, even if it yields 10 yards, it'll seem like, oh, wow, they're really trying some things there, or it draws them off sides or whatever. But if it doesn't work, the reverse payoff is so substantial. Like, what are you doing?
And this is Mike's problem of not calculating risk and reward enough, and always has been. And that's the run at the end, too. Like, the reward of that sneak play is that you get to the 25 instead of the 40. And then you get one last shot at the end zone from the 25 instead of, I guess, two Hail Mary kind of passes. But the risk is huge. We saw
any number of things could go wrong, and they did.
And they did. Then they went wrong, and the game's over. And then you just lose without ever getting a chance to score. It's an asinine thing to think about. Like,
can we put to bed that it was not the ref's fault?
We should go in detail. It was not the ref's fault. If you follow Football Zebras on Twitter, there's a very good breakdown of what the rule actually is here and what the responsibilities of the official are. And if the team self-spots, the official, if it's close, can walk over and tap the ball, but they are typically not allowed to do it if it's spotted more than a yard away from the proper spot. And if you go and look at that, it's very clear that the Cowboys... Cowboys center spotted the ball way too far forward. You should go and give it to the official so that he can spot it quickly, because they're trying to move quickly too. And that just didn't happen. It was a fundamental breakdown. Should have given it. If you're going to spot it yourself, you have to get it right, but you shouldn't do that. But you have to get it right. They didn't do that, and that ended the game. Not the ref's fault at all. Refs did everything correctly.
I don't know who runs that Football Zebras account, but I learned more from that Twitter account than
game day. And I suppose we should vet it at some point to make sure that they actually do know what they're talking about. They seem to, though. They seem to always be pretty on with the rules.
There is a failed Packers last-minute drive where Randall Cobb self-spotted. And, like, I'm struggling to find it. The only reason I remember it is because Cobb self-spotted and people were mad, but they lost anyway, so...
I mean, all Badger fans probably feel a little salty about this one, but that was the referee's fault. So,
yeah. Oh, that's a whole different can of worms, I think.
Yes.
Okay. So our dream of Mike McCarthy coming to Lambeau Field is dead.
Yes, indeed.
For at least another year. And then the 49ers are the team that will be coming to Lambeau instead. Earlier this year, they honestly, like, that's a game where, I mean, you've pointed out that honestly, with the way the officiating was, the Packers probably should have won that game more handily. To me, it feels like a game they stole. I've made
it's
the
kind of
comment.
Both.
Yeah, I mean, I made the comment that Henry Black, with the allowance of Kyle Juszczyk to score, I don't think he meant to, but Kyle Juszczyk ran over him like he was nothing, got into the end zone, gave the Packers plenty of time to mount an attack with no timeouts down the middle of the field. Really, really just a genius.
It was a
2-minute
great
drill.
Drive. Great, like, yep. 40-second drive. That was an insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 2-minute drill, but like without the 2 minutes. And then a 51-yard field goal for Mason Crosby to win the game at the buzzer. Very excited. Aaron Rodgers was filmed on the sideline there. That was early in the season. I think that made them 2-1 or something. But a game that I always marked on the calendar as, well, they won, but like they really probably shouldn't have. Maybe you could argue they probably should have anyway. I don't know. It doesn't give me a lot of confidence, even though this game is at home.
The way it was officiated, they should not have won. Now, Aaron stole that one. But I at the time I wrote an article for Acme Packing Company on this, and I calculated all of the winning percentage and EPA lost from calls that were just bullshit calls, and I tried to adjust for calls that were legit. Like there was a tripping call that went on Adrian Amos that was actually the biggest call of the game.
Right.
But that call was legit. Like that was it's not doesn't get called often, but he did commit it, so whatever.
But then someone on the 49ers
there was a holding penalty. Yes, there was a holding penalty.
But no, but then they also overtly tripped and it didn't get called.
Yes, yes, fine. There's that too. There was like an intentional grounding penalty that should have been called on Jimmy Garoppolo that was very obvious. There were a bunch of very questionable pass interference penalties, especially at the end of the first half.
The third and ten, was that the one on Stokes?
Yes, Eric Stokes got hit twice with two questionable ones. One was on third and ten that gave the 49ers a first down. And essentially the Packers were robbed of something like 12 to 14 points by Jerome Boger's crew in that game. So accounting for all of that, they really did dominate on a per-play basis. The Packers were much better than the 49ers in this game. The 49ers were not efficient. They didn't run the ball well, which is a 49ers staple. Jimmy Garoppolo was very Jimmy Garoppolo. He was 25 of 40 for 257 yards, so 10 yards pass, threw an interception, threw a hilarious backward pass for no good reason that everybody should go watch again because it's amazing. But they weren't good. They just got into a bit of a rock fight because of Boger's crew, and they probably should have won the rock fight, and they didn't. The Packers stole it, so yay for that. But we can't really learn too much from that game. It was so dysfunctional as a football game that there's not a lot to take away other than the Packers are perfectly capable of beating the 49ers, and if they're not careful, the 49ers can stick around and do that too. So that's kind of what you get there. And a lot of the weaknesses and strengths were on display. George Kittle was the best receiver for the 49ers, and the Packers struggled with tight ends. He went 7-9 for 92 yards. And MVS had one of his best games of the year. 3-4 for 59 yards. He caught one bomb. He was overshot on another. And the 49ers are the worst team, second worst team in the league against deep passes. This is an MVS game if there ever was one. So that's kind of how that one rolled. And the Packers can certainly win it if they play a clean game. They probably should win this game every time. We have good, by the way, we have good officiating in this game. I've forgotten the official's name. It's kind of a funny name.
Torbert.
No, it's Torbert. I forgot his first name. It's like Ted Ron. Torbert or something like that.
It's Ron.
Is it Ron Torbert? Ron Torbert does not call a lot of penalties, and the Packers have a very good record with Ron Torbert games, and the 49ers have a very poor record with Ron Torbert games. So
I looked it up. Throughout the 2021 season, he is averaging two fewer flags a game under league average.
Good. I like that.
Also, shout-outs to the rundown auto formatting for saying that MVS had three quarters of a catch. Auto-formatted his 3-4 into three quarters. And I'm done. It reminds me of the time that Archon 14 was complaining about putting combine data into Excel because it kept saying that players were June 3rd tall.
Excel is just, I don't know why they can't get that right, but the Excel incel meme is like the best one. So mistaking something for a date, it's perfect.
So if we watch the 49ers, obviously Kittle is one of the top of mind issues. Debo Samuel is the other. And in that first game, Debo Samuel had some impact, but was largely not. He was not a game breaker. Yeah. So what did the Packers do in that game? And is it repeatable?
They did a great job on Debo Samuel. And one of the good things about the Packer defense is that while they don't rank well on a lot of efficiency stats, they were a good tackling team this year. And the way to beat the 49ers is to let them complete passes in front of you and tackle them. Let them do their crazy outside running and tackle them. They will kill you if you lose your discipline on the outside. And if you miss any tackles, that's where Debo makes his yards. He's the best yak guy in the league by a lot. Devondre Campbell was huge in game one, keeping things in front of him. Everybody tackled great, and Debo was held in check for that reason. That is fundamentally what you have to do against them, because that's their entire game. And the Cowboys switched their defense at halftime and played a much better second half by just playing basically a cover two shell, keeping everything in front of them and tackling everything and making Garoppolo try and go over the top, which he is completely incapable of doing. So
it's also worth noting that Garoppolo's pick against the Packers wasn't that dumb.
It wasn't. He's just not a good quarterback. So,
well, yeah, people kind of forget that, like, Jair red hit his eyes and bailed on his receiver, but also is like a 4-3 guy.
Yeah. It was the Superman play. It was awesome. But
yeah, like, he came out of nowhere.
Garoppolo doesn't, you know, he's vulnerable to things like that, and he makes bad decisions, and he doesn't push the ball with any force down the field, so that allows.
And he also has a broken thumb and a bad shoulder, both on his throwing hand.
Are we actually sure that's true? I saw the rumor going around, but do we know that he's
okay? So the shoulder has been confirmed, and also the rumor, I guess, from within the team is that the shoulder actually became an issue right around the time he started sucking. So, like 4 years ago, yeah. I guess.
All right, but
okay. A lot of other changes for the 49ers, including no more Josh Norman, who is a flashy name, but was not exactly getting it done. So yeah. this 49ers team, we think is a little better than the one they saw in week 3 or 4, right?
I think that's right. Their offensive line is still mostly intact and very good. When the Packers played them, they had just gone through a string of having like 5 running backs all get hurt at the same time. They drafted Trey Sermon really high, and he's a good athlete, and he played in that game, but he sucks. I think we can close the book on Trey Sermon, that he just sucks. Elijah Mitchell has established himself as the running back there, and he is now healthy. He played very well against the Cowboys, and he's playing in this game. Samson Ekubon has taken over for, is it, I should have written first names down. Is it Jerome Kinlaw? Am I right about that? Off the top of my head, they have Kinlaw and Greenlaw, and I wrote down Dre Greenlaw, but forgot whatever. The secondary is the big one. So the secondary,
it's Javon, by the way,
Javon Kinlaw. Sorry,
Javon Kinlaw.
Yeah, the secondary is where it's huge, because Josh Norman is still playing very limited snaps, but he is the second worst graded PFF corner in football, and he looks it. He's really bad. He looks washed. His replacement is Ambry Thomas, who's not that much better, but the big difference is Kwon Williams now basically plays every snap, and he didn't in that first game, and he's actually pretty good. The slot corner in that game was a guy named Diamador Lenoir. I don't know how to say that name.
Isn't it Diamador?
Diamador Lenoir.
I don't know. I guess I haven't heard that name said out loud. Well, that's what I've always thought.
He's awful, and he no longer plays. So they torched him pretty well in the first game, and he doesn't ever play. He doesn't see the field. So secondary is a lot better. Linebacking core is a lot better. Running back's a lot better. And also, Brandon Ayuk has just had a great second half of the season and is now an actual threat. Whereas when the Packers played against them, he was an afterthought and actually had a pretty good game against the Packers. But now he is like an actual good downfield threat and pairs up with Debo and Kittle very well. Their offense is much, much better.
It's truly disappointing that Diamador Lenoir is not good, because that is an awesome name.
It is an awesome name.
And it would be awesome if he were awesome. Very sad. He's
a corner in the 30s. His number's 38.
Not a good sign.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. The Packers don't have Elton Jenkins. They don't have Robert Tonyan. They don't have Randall Cobb. Well, they did have Randall Cobb in this game. But they've got some changes. They were able to make this work with this. Was Yash Nyman was already there, had already established himself as like a quality contributor at this point. So, you know, they were still running with some of these guys, but
I don't think Elton played in this game. I think he was out for the first game for some other reason, not for the long-term injury. So they had the total backup line in this game too. And so
Josh Myers was around, right?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
But having Bakhtiari back should actually make a noticeable difference over what they had the first time around. So that's good. The biggest difference is Rasul Douglas was not there for this game before. Jair was, but the Packers secondary is now much better. And they have, I think, some ability now to actually cover tight ends if Jair plays, of course, and actually do something against Kittle. That's the biggest thing here is the 49ers can actually stress you with their receiving core pretty well. They go pretty deep between Debo and Ayuk and Kittle, and the Packers can actually match up with that now, whereas they really couldn't before. So that, I think, is maybe the biggest difference in the game. They really ate up. Chandon Sullivan had good percentage numbers last game. He had 3 of 5 passes against him, but he got torched on those 3 catches. They went for 67 yards. They were big ones, and Chandon will probably be the biggest, you know, guy off the field when Alexander comes back. That should work to their advantage.
Also, Jenkins hurt his ankle against the Lions. That's why he was out there against the Niners.
Yeah, as I'm saying it, it's like, why was Yash Nyman in this game? But I get it now. Elton Jenkins was not. So they had Newman, they had Runyon, they had
Newman.
Newman. They had Turner, they had Myers, and that was that. Josh Nyman. Josh Nyman's star was just starting to rise.
Yeah.
And do you think it's a big Devontae game since the Niners do have trouble? I mean, outside isn't necessarily, you said MBS is a big factor. Hopefully he's at full strength because we don't know that to be true yet. But I imagine Devontae then will try to eat a little bit on the outside, yeah. Right?
The 49ers, I think
every game from now on is going to be a big Devontae.
yeah, right. That's true.
More so than this one than most, though. The 49ers have what I think is sort of the good inside linebacker splits on the receiving core, on their defending receiving splits. They're the second worst team against number one receivers. They are terrible against them. They struggle mightily. A lot of that is Cooper Kupp just eating them up terribly. But I
Cooper Kupp eating them up.
Devontae is, you know, essentially as good. He's better than Cooper Kupp is, and he should have his way with their secondary. But they're kind of bad against all outside receivers. They're basically bad against any kind of downfield throws, and their corners have struggled for that reason. A couple years ago, they had a very dominant secondary when they had Richard Sherman and still had a lot of the good safety play they have now with Ward. But that has gotten old and gotten not on the team anymore, and now they really can't stop anything outside. They're very good against tight ends and pass-catching running backs. They're fourth and fifth. That's kind of their whole pass defense. The way to attack the 49ers is simple, and the Packers have Devontae, so it's even more simple. It's feed Devontae, shoot for Lazard and everybody else deep, including Cobb if he plays, and that should be plenty to score points. As long as they do that, they should be fine. Running the ball against San Francisco is idiotic and should not be done too much. Yeah, we are obviously, the running backs are not great podcast, but AJ Dillon can certainly be useful against teams that can't stop the run. That is not this. They're second against the run. They barely ever have a 100-yard rusher against them. There's no reason to run the ball against them too much. It's easy to pass against them. So one of my worries is that they do fall in love in the frozen tundra atmosphere with trying to pound the ball a little too much. And that happened a little bit last game where Aaron Jones was okay but not great and put one on the ground. And I could see that kind of repeating itself. But they should not run the ball that much in this game. Don't do it.
I have a feeling Aaron Rodgers against the San Francisco 49ers in what might be his last postseason is not going to allow for a lot of running of the football.
Probably
That's just
not.
A hunch.
Yeah.
He's going to check out of the runs. Do you guys want to hear something good that came out of McAfee?
Yeah, totally.
Aaron Rodgers and his computer football brain was talking about the Devontae touchdown against the Browns when they ran that like all-out blitz. It was cover zero. So Devontae was in the slot, and what they had called in the Shanahan offense is called a Joe route. It turns out, I looked this up, the Joe route in this offense, in other offenses, is called the jerk off route. So the reason it's called the Joe is because J-O. So where the guy in the slot runs a slant directly at the mic and then climbs from there. But the Rodgers was reading like a mega blitz, which ended up what happening. They rushed like seven from the middle, and it was man-to-man the other four. Devontae and Aaron just looked at each other. He didn't even call an actual check. They just looked at each other, and Devontae knew what to do at that point.
That's incredible.
That is
so
incredible.
People always talked about this, like, sixth sense that Rodgers had with Jordy. Like, he always kind of knew where... Like, I remember in 2011, there's this play where it seems like Rodgers just, like, throws it up for a prayer, and it just lands in Jordy's hands. Like hit him in stride 60 yards down the field. And I feel like we have that with Rodgers and Devontae at this point.
I do too.
Just Devontae is never going to be able to run like Jordy did.
Yeah. The other thing with the Niners is you don't want to get behind because they are a good running team, and they are capable of pulling off kind of a Cleveland on the Packers. They have a very good offensive line. Mitchell is good, but Debo is especially good if you can get him going outside to kill time too. So you want to be ahead. You want to make Garoppolo have to throw down the field. If you do that, you win going away, no problem. And that's what the plan should be, and they should be able to do it. But the 49ers are a smart team, and they do have a shot. They have the weapons to do it, and it should be a good game if nothing else. I actually wish it was in better condition. I'm a little worried about the bad weather coming into play and turning it into a running contest, because the 49ers will win a running contest. If it's hard to pass at all, this kind of, I think, swings to their favor a little bit.
I'm trying to remember, Garoppolo, I think, was 6 of 8 a couple years ago in the NFC Championship
game
passing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
Raheem Mostert had 200 yards rushing and Garoppolo completed six passes. That is how that went.
Then what a shame that Raheem Mostert is not here for this, because
that was the introduction that I gave you guys to John Hack. Wisconsin powerlifting legend John Hack posted a hilarious meme about Raheem Mostert on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It was the draw 26 Uno meme. It was like tackle Raheem Mostert to draw 26, and it showed a guy with a Packers logo for face.
Yeah. yes. And Debo had a good running game in that game too. That was one of his first big rushing games. So
I was surprised Debo only had like 300 yards rushing this season.
They only turned to him the last like four games of the season as a sort of primary rushing. It was a gimmick until then, but
he's just like, wow, that's low.
Is it? Hmm. I actually thought it was higher than that too, so I'm surprised.
Oh yeah, I thought it was way higher than that.
Yeah, but he's been running a lot more lately, so I'm not that surprised at that.
Hmm. And All right. So are we going to do the quiz here, or is that are we skipping over that to go to questions?
I think we should do. I think we should do.
We're only a half hour in. Let's do the quiz. It's
all right.
It's not that long. We can go through questions faster.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We need to.
Here we go.
All right, everybody ready? So yes. We're starting the quiz down now. So editing time. We will have two categories of five questions each, and then we will have a sort of name that tune where I will give you a category, and you will have to wager against each other as to who can name the most people in that category. The questions on the first two rounds range from 1 to 3 points based on difficulty. And I have hints, but a hint takes a point away. So, and I will of course keep score here in writing somehow. All right, are you guys ready?
Yes,
I'm ready.
The first one is easy. It is worth 1 point. This. By the way, category is Packers as enemies. These are players who played for the Packers and then also played for another team in the playoffs against the Packers. Okay.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Probably.
Okay.
Yes.
The time frame for this is all, I think, Rodgers era. So anyway, no,
okay,
that's a lie. That's a lie. It's not super ageist, but that is a lie because the first one is older than that. But you'll get it because it's easy. All right, here we go. This former Packer training camp invitee played a pivotal role in handing Aaron Rodgers his first playoff loss as a starter.
Come on. Hitting the damn button. It won't
hit
the button.
Also hitting the button and nothing is happening. Nothing's happening. I don't think this is working.
All right, we'll just say Buzz. That's annoying.
Kurt Warner.
All right. Yeah, I mean that works for me. If he just announces it, he can get the point. That's fine.
All right. I will just make. I'll just have to be a judge. That's unfortunate, but whatever. All right, Matt with 1 point. Good job,
Matt. Proud of you.
Yay. All right. So, are you just going to scream out answers, or are you going to say Buzz first?
Yep. I'll say Buzz.
Yeah. Let's scream out the answers. Better radio.
It's better radio. Okay. Sorry, all right. I'm resizing my screen. All right, question two. And remember, these are all people who played for the Packers and a different team. This one is a three-pointer. No, this, I'm sorry. This is a one-pointer as well, also easy. In the 2010 NFC Championship game, this future Packer was held largely in check, recording only two tackles and a roughing the passer penalty.
Julius Peppers.
That is correct. JR with the points. All right. Now they get harder. Now they get harder. Question three. This one is worth 3 points, but there are hints if you don't get them. In the Super Bowl, the Packers faced off against one of their former players who managed to get the best of Tremont Williams on three occasions.
I'm not going to get this.
All right. Hint number one. This player attended Penn State and was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Jets in 2007. You'll get it with the second hint, I think.
Man,
He joined the Packers in 2008, replacing incumbent Derek Frost.
Jeremy Kapanos?
It is Jeremy Kapanos. JR with the points. The punter.
Punters, baby! Punters!
Yes.
Got the best of Tremont. Okay, I get it. I was thinking Tremont was corner. Tremont,
yeah, you were thinking of a receiver. Like
Tremont Williams was the returner. He actually committed a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on one of his punt returns and fumbled on the other. So had a bad punt returning day. All right, question four, also worth 3 points, but with hints. The Packers were beaten soundly by the Giants in the 2011 divisional round, and this old friend, a defensive back, would chip in with a tackle. He barely missed out on getting a ring in 2010 with the Packers, but he did get one with the Giants. All right, hint number one. While a Packer, he recorded three punt return touchdowns while also becoming one of the only players in NFL history to return a punt and a fumble for a touchdown in the same game.
Is that Will Blackman?
It is Will Blackman for two. Nice job, JR.
JR is going to destroy me.
I think I was at one of the games he returned for a punt touchdown, so that's unfair advantage.
I believe this is the hardest one. So, question five, last question of the round. In the famous Joe Webb playoff game against the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, Joe Webb.
This big man out of Florida State recorded four solo tackles and surprisingly...
LaTroy Guyon.
Matt!
Wow, I couldn't even do anything about it.
Matt with three. Holy cow. How did you know LaTroy Guyon off of that?
Because Florida... You said big man from Florida State.
All right. all right. So, there is a bonus question at the end of this round. It has no hints. It is worth 1 point. This reporting as eligible favorite also appeared in the Joe Webb game, unsurprisingly catching
Devin Aromashadu.
It is Devin Aromashadu caught 0 of 3 targets from Joe Webb, as was his ilk. All right.
Was that his fault or was that Joe Webb's
fault? It's a little bit of anger, but it's Joe Webb's fault mostly. Other people caught passes in that game. All right. Category.
So anyway, the only reason I remember LaTroy Guyon that well is because he got arrested in Florida with all of his weed and money and guns.
I don't even remember that at all about LaTroy Guyon.
He got pulled over in Florida. He had a pound of weed, a handgun, and $250,000 in cash.
That is not how you want to get pulled over. All right. Second category, Aaron's interceptions.
Oh, boy.
Aaron Rodgers barely ever gets picked in the regular season, having just 93 interceptions, but he has a whole bunch in the playoffs. He has 13 in his 20 games as a starter. So these are about people who have intercepted Aaron Rodgers. So, question one. In the 2010 NFC Championship game, Aaron threw two interceptions, neither of which was to a defensive back. The one everyone remembers was picked off by Brian Urlacher. Who got the other one?
That's a really good question.
It is Lance Briggs.
Nice. Well done. Yes. Well done, Matub.
Good job, Matt.
Man.
So the only reason I remember that is because of Team America.
Team America World Police?
Yes. Okay. So what? Hans Briggs is in
Hans
Team
Blix.
America. Blix. Whatever. Sorry. Hans Blix. Blix. And so every time the Packers would play the Bears, my sister would walk into the room and go, ha, Lance Briggs.
Wow. Okay. Now I have to decide whether to edit that out or not. Matt currently leads 6-4.
A
bit of an upset in the making, honestly.
It's true.
All right.
I'm going full Slumdog here. I've got a story for every answer.
All right. Question two. The worst Packer game of our lifetime was an interception fest with Russell Wilson throwing four picks, two to Ha Clinton Dix, one to Sam Shields, and a late nearly game-sealing in interception to Morgan Burnett. But Aaron wasn't immune against the Legion of Boom. The Packers' very first drive would end on a Richard Sherman interception in Seattle territory, and in the middle of the second quarter, after he allowed a 23-yard completion to Jordy Nelson to put Green Bay into Seattle territory, this cornerback would immediately get his revenge.
Browner.
It is not Browner. Jared.
No, it's Byron Maxwell.
It is Byron Maxwell.
Oh, JR, I hate that game.
JR right back in it.
I hate that game so much.
And today's the anniversary, and it's all over my goddamn timeline.
All right. Question three. The Packers made the NFC Championship game in Matt LaFleur's first season, facing off against the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan. And in what was one of the Shanahaniest games ever, Jimmy Garoppolo completed just 6 of 8 passes for 77 yards, while Raheem Mostert went cuckoo bananas for 220 yards, with Debo chipping in 43. Aaron didn't help the cause, as Richard Sherman got him once again, sealing the game with a pick just after the two-minute warning. But earlier in the game, when a comeback was still possible and the Packers were running their two-minute offense, this cornerback, who is still on the 49ers and will be starting this week and just returned from injury, picked off a pass intended for Geronimo Allison. It took Raheem Mostert 3 more carries to score a touchdown and basically put the game away. What was the name of that cornerback? Still on the team.
Is it Mosley?
It is Emmanuel Mosley.
Oh. Damn it. Dude, that's a full-on guess. I have no idea. I just know he's still there. Yeah, I just know he's still there. That's all I got.
He is their best current cornerback, by the way.
I don't remember. I don't remember that at all.
I love how Paul is going full Legends of the Hidden Temple. he's like all Mac over here.
I'm Jared does this professionally, so I'm not quite as good, but that's fine. All right, number four. No one remembers anymore, but Aaron's first ever playoff pass in the 51-45 loss to Arizona was intercepted by this cornerback, a first-round pick of the Cardinals in 2008, and cousin to another famous defensive back.
I keep trying to picture Arizona defensive backs, and all I can think of is Buddha Baker.
The cousin clue is a big clue.
Is it Pat P?
It is not.
Damn it. He's too late.
Okay. I have only one hint to give you for this one. There are a lot of cornerbacks with this last name.
Barber?
No, it's
Williams?
No, Smith? it's the one with all the kids.
Oh, Cromartie?
Yeah.
Which Cromartie?
Which Cromartie?
Marcus?
I was going to say Antonio.
I don't know.
Okay, no one's getting
it's got to be Antonio.
It is Dominique Rogers Cromartie. Picked off Aaron Rodgers' first ever playoff pass.
Yeah, all right. DRC.
All right, number five, last in the category. The Jared Cook play saved the day against the Cowboys in 2017, but it may not have been necessary if Aaron had settled for a check down in 3rd and 8 at the Dallas 38 instead of trying to hit Davante Adams deep. This Cowboy safety picked off the pass, returning it 27 yards and setting up a short field for Dallas. This is the hardest one. Nobody's ever heard of this guy.
Oh, well, how are we going to have heard of this guy?
All right. First, there's one hint. His last name is a candy bar.
Hershey.
Heath. Jeff Heath.
It is Jeff Heath.
Yes. Incredible. I would have never gotten it without the candy bar, but I love me some Heath.
JR now leading 9-6 as Matub has stalled out a little bit.
Heath is the only candy bar that is better as a crumble than an actual candy bar.
It is certainly Heath, one of them.
Heath bits
are great. Coffee bits are good. Yes.
Heath is just chocolate coated coffee.
Yeah. All right.
What do we got?
Now we get to the name that tune portion. So Matt is behind, so he will get to make the first wager. So I will read you this question as an example, and then explain how it works. There are 6 players to have a 100-yard rushing performance against Green Bay in the playoffs since Aaron Rodgers became the starter of the team in 2008. How many do you think you can name?
Hold on. These are Packers running backs or opponents?
Opposing running backs. Oh, actually, opposing rushers, I should say. there are 6 of them. Matt, you get to go first. How many do you think you can name?
I can guarantee 2.
JR, can you go 3?
I mean, if he's guaranteeing two, then I have to come up with three. So I'm going to try.
Okay, Jared can do three. Matt, can you do four?
No, I can't do four. Three would be my limit.
Okay, JR, give me three 100-yard rushing performances against the Packers since 2008.
Okay, well, Raheem Mostert.
Raheem Mostert is correct.
Jeez. you know what? I'm blanking here. I can't do it. I can't do more than that.
All right. So Matt's going to get the point. Matt, do you want to give us what you got?
Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick is correct as well.
Of course. Oh my gosh.
Those are my two.
I'm trying to picture other 49ers running backs or Cowboys running backs. I got nothing.
Your other options are Marshawn Lynch, who did it. Ezekiel Elliott, who did it, I believe, in the Cook game. DeMarco Murray and Frank Gore.
Those are not low-level names.
I would have guessed Gore. If I had to do gun to head for the third one, I would have said Gore.
All right, so Matt gets the point there. JR, you get the first bid on this one. So the Packers have only two 100-yard rushing performances in the playoffs in the Rodgers era. So we're going to back that up a little bit to a 65-yard rushing performance. So there are five Packer running backs, or I guess you'd say rushers, who have had more than 65 yards rushing in a game, in a playoff game in the Rodgers era. How many can you name of the five?
Well, we'll start with...
you get to don't say names. Bid how many you can do.
Yeah. No. I'll start with one. Let's just keep it simple.
Matt, can you do two?
Three.
Goes to three. Jared, can you do four?
Shoot, because I'm pretty sure I could do three, and I'm not sure I could do four. Let me take a shot at four.
Four. Okay. Matt, can you do all five?
I can't do
five. All right, Jared.
Can't do five.
Let's hear him.
Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones is correct.
Ty Montgomery, maybe?
Ty Montgomery is not correct.
Okay, do I still get another guess, or have I blown it?
You have blown it.
Oh, okay, because I do have another name that I would have rolled out that was a little below the radar.
Okay, I'll tell you if you're right or wrong. Go ahead.
I was going to say DeJuan Harris.
No.
Oh, okay. And then James Starks is an easy one, but I was saving him.
Yes.
I was going to say Jones, Starks, and then I was going to take a guess on Brandon Jackson.
No.
Lacy?
Eddie Lacy is correct. James Starks, Eddie Lacy, Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, and Aaron Rodgers are the answers to this one.
Aaron Rodgers had a 65-yard game?
He did.
Is that against Atlanta?
I don't know. I do not have that one in parentheses, unfortunately. It might have been Atlanta. I'm not sure. All right.
Well, so I'm doing extraordinarily poorly.
Matt now just trails by 1 point. There are we've got three of these left. Three of these left. So next one. For the Packers, in the Rodgers era in the playoffs, eight players have had a 100-yard performance at least once. How many of the eight players that have had 100-yard games for the Packers can you name?
We're talking about receiving now, right?
Receiving.
Because we've already done rushing.
Receiving. So, okay. Matt, you go first on this one. JR went first last time.
Three.
Okay, three?
I could do four for sure.
All right, four from JR. Can you do five, Matt?
This is 100-yard receivers in the Aaron Rodgers era.
100-yard pass catchers, let's say. But
100-yard pass catchers in the Aaron Rodgers era.
In the Aaron Rodgers era, in the playoffs.
In a single game in the playoffs. And JR said four?
Yep.
I can't do five.
Okay, four to JR. Let's hear him.
Oh, easy. Easy peasy. Nelson Jennings, Finley Cobb.
Nelson Jennings, Finley Cobb. That is four, and that is all correct.
That was going to be my four.
I didn't even say Adams, who's five for sure.
Adams has the most in a playoff game in that time.
Sure. And then let me think if I can keep going here. Driver, maybe?
Nope, not Driver.
Okay. All right.
Your other options were Jeff Janis.
Janis in the Arizona game.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And Jared Cook.
Yes, really? Last year against San Francisco. He had four catches for 115 yards.
That's right. He did.
Jesus.
Nailed it. And Jared Cook as well. That's your other one. So
I was going to guess Cook. That would be.
All right. So JR.
Because that Cowboys game, right? The Cook catch game, he had over 100.
Cook catch game, he had over 100. Mm-hmm. All right. So Jared gets to bid first on this one. Matt did in that one. This is Packers with multiple sacks in one playoff game. There are five of them to choose from. JR, you are the first bidder.
I'm trying to think if the two I know are Aaron Rodgers era or not. I can do two.
Okay. Two from JR. Matt, can you do three?
Yes.
Yeah. JR, can you do four?
I am not going to do four. Okay. I'm going to let Matt do three.
Give me three.
Okay. Clay Matthews?
That is correct. He did it twice.
Julius Peppers?
That is not correct. He did not do it. So that's a point for JR.
So here's a couple names I would have thrown out there. I don't know if they're correct. I would have said Nick Perry.
That is correct.
And Mike Neal.
That is also correct.
Yes. So I would have been able.
So you would have got it anyway. So,
you know, I don't know if I would have said Peppers or wait. Yeah, I don't know if I'd have said that.
Yep. Your other options were Za'Darius Smith and Morgan Burnett.
Oh, geez, Morgan Burnett. Hello.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is the last category. I do have a tiebreaker if there's a tie, but there's not going to be a tie.
Yeah, I was like, I'm behind by like four, right?
You are. Yeah, no, you're behind by three. So, it was close, but Jared's pulled away. But we'll do it. So, last real question: the Packers with at least one interception in a playoff game. There are 11 players.
Oh God,
Matt, you can go first.
One.
All right.
I can do three.
Okay.
Four.
Jared, can you five?
I can try to do five, yes.
Okay. Matt, six.
I can't all do right. six.
Jared, let's hear five.
Okay, well, Jair Alexander.
Yes.
Tremont Williams.
Yes.
Haha Clinton Dix.
Yes.
Adrian Amos.
Yes.
Thinking. Come on. I've got so many names. Morgan Burnett.
Yes, that is correct.
I've done it.
You've done it. You get the point. Well done.
Micah Hyde's got to have one too, right? Somewhere in there? Or is he too far back?
Micah Hyde also.
Charles goddamn Woodson.
Charles goddamn Woodson.
Charles Woodson does not, actually.
Oh! He had no interceptions in the playoffs.
Nope.
That's ridiculous.
So your other options were Sam Shields. Who has a bunch of them that are super important.
Crucial ones.
Did you say Morgan Burnett as one?
I did.
He
yes.
Did. Okay.
No Moss.
Jared Bush, of course, in the Super Bowl had one. Mm-hmm. Nick Collins has at least one.
In the Super Bowl.
BJ.
How did I not say him first?
BJ Raji, of course, has a very famous playoff interception. And Demarius Randall has a playoff interception.
I never would have guessed Demarius Randall.
Yep. Shout out to Demarius Randall. So, how did I not say Collins and Raji? Here's the thing.
I also forgot them. If we were just bullshitting, I could name all of those people. not in a quiz format. Your brain shuts off.
I feel so tense now.
All right.
But I won, so not that tense.
Jer has officially won. He went 11-7, but a good contest there. Do you guys want to do the tiebreaker question, or should we just go
sure,
on?
Sure, let's
just,
I mean, we might as well.
All right. The for fun question, this one is, of course, harder, and I was going to, there was a tiebreaker, but we'll just do it.
Make it
the same thing.
Make it worth 5 points.
No, we're not doing that. That's ridiculous. We'll give you a separate, this will be like the Champions League trophy if you get this right. It'll be a separate thing. All right. There are 10 receivers to gain at least 100 yards against the Packers in a single playoff game. It was going to be the receiver with the most yards win, but we'll just see how many you can do. Same format as before. How many can you do?
This is just the Aaron Rodgers era, right?
Yes, it is. That's right. Okay, Matt, you can go first.
Two.
Damn, dude. I don't know. I don't know if I could do two. I mean, I could do two. I don't know if I could do three. So I'm going to let Matub do two.
All right, Matt, we'll give you a point for two, and then we'll give you another point for anyone over two that you get right.
Nice. I like
it. Okay, so this is people who have 100 yards receiving against the Packers.
That is correct.
In the Aaron Rodgers era. Larry Fitzgerald?
Larry Fitzgerald is correct.
Can I say Larry Fitzgerald twice?
You cannot.
Pain.
Golden Tate.
Golden Tate is not correct.
Damn it.
Oh.
That's hurtful. Heartbreak.
So the player with the most is Julio Jones, who had 180 against Ladarius Gunter's coverage in that game. Larry Fitzgerald the second with 176. That is then Hakeem Nicks with 165, Tyler Lockett with 136, Dez Bryant
Lockett.
with 132. The surprising Steve Breston with 125, I think, in the Cuckoo Bananas game. Michael Crabtree with 125. Jordan Reed with 120. Chris Godwin last year with 110. And Doug Baldwin with 106. So,
okay, so there were three Seattle receivers I could have chosen. I chose the wrong one.
Yep. All right.
So. I was like, someone on Seattle.
That's all right. Good, so quiz, we did everybody. Okay.
Yep.
We did okay.
I think you answered actually more than I thought you guys would. You only missed one, which is kind of incredible. Some of those are hard.
Yeah, man. Well, especially like Matub said, when your brain is shutting off because you've got like a debt, you know, you're feeling a buzzer.
Yeah.
That maybe isn't even there. But all right. Now, I guess we go to questions, right?
Questions.
Mark Podscarby.
Mark Podscarby. Yes. Now, I unfortunately have to reload the questions because
everyone talks about how most of our good players have already tested positive for COVID. But one guy we haven't discussed is head coach. If Matt LaFleur had to miss a playoff game, who takes over head coaching duties, and how big of a loss would that be?
I think it's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Probably Hackett, right?
Well, it would be Hackett.
Yeah. And I think a big loss.
Yeah.
That my impression is that Matt LaFleur is very good in game at calling the offense, and that there would be a significant downgrade to Hackett. I think that.
Well, okay. So the big question though is, if we lost Matt, could Nathaniel Hackett?
No, I don't think he could. So we have no way of knowing.
Come on.
Yeah.
It's good. Also, is there no communication between those who are not at the game and
yeah. You are cut off on the sideline. No outside communication except for up to the booth.
Let's be real that they could, of course, have someone on a cell phone. There's no way to stop it from happening.
And the surfaces on the sideline are not connected to any network. You can get in a lot of trouble for having a phone out. You just have the phones up to the booth. I don't know how closely the booth guys are monitored.
The booth is probably where you could get it done, I think. So I don't know. But it would be bad if that happened, for sure.
I guess I kind of understand. I don't know if I understand. You know, like, this is such a unique situation. And I think coaches, in the instance that they are kept out because of an illness, should have the right to communicate with their people. You know, especially if they're asymptomatic and there's no reason to rest.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like you basically lost a lottery and therefore cannot be part of the game. But whatever. I'm sure it's a can of worms or something.
Here's the thing. If the Packers make it to the Super Bowl and anyone tests positive for the Super Bowl, that test is getting lost.
By the way,
yeah, I know.
There have been no COVID list players during the playoffs thus far. It has not happened.
Zero people have tested positive.
Zero tests. Yes. During the Omicron surge that we have had zero people. Actually.
But we could have seen this coming because the vast majority of NFL players have already tested positive. The population has run out.
There is that, but also it's pretty.
Yes,
it's pretty.
I also pick up what you're saying. Yes. I'm picking up on what you're saying. That, tests.
It's super sus.
Super sus. Super sus. All right. Patrick Detmer asks, What would you say are the main differences in how these two teams match up between now and the 2019 NFC Championship game? Aside from the 49ers secondary, how is this team different from the iteration that went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago? And one of the differences we kind of touched on is Devondre Campbell. To have somebody who's capable of keeping that running game in check, that's something they did not have in 2019. It's a big difference.
Well, I think he's asking, how are these Niners different?
Well, yeah, there's two parts to this. Two parts. Yeah.
And I think you can't really gloss over the secondary, because that secondary was much better for the 49ers than this secondary is. And it does have some people in common, but a lot of those people are older. Like Josh Norman was a really good player 2 years ago, and not on the team then. But, Richard Sherman is now very old and not on the team anymore. And their backup cornerbacks aren't very good. So that's really the big thing. They still have a lot of the same upfront personnel, and they actually still have a pretty good pass rush. Like Nick Bosa is still really good, although he's had a good year, but he has declined a little bit post-injury. But it's really the secondary. That is the main thing. The Packers also match up better for all the reasons JR said. They have a better defense with better personnel, too, against this offense. But the 49ers... just aren't. They're older, they're more hurt, and they're less talented in the secondary than they were before. That's a lot of it. And Raheem Mostert, we say running backs don't matter, but the exception that proves the rule is always the Packers in the playoffs. And Raheem Mostert is one of the best athletes ever to play running back, and he's hurt and not coming back. He ran for 220 yards. A backup running back would not have been as good in that game as Raheem Mostert. He is one of the fastest people. Even Deebo Samuel is not the burner that Raheem Mostert is. So
what about Trey? What's his face?
Trey Sermon actually is the burner, but he's not a good running back. He's a football stupid player, which is sometimes happens.
You know what? Jerick McKinnon was really fast, but football stupid. He is now really fast and not football stupid anymore.
You can learn. People learn. People change. Yeah. People grow.
You know, the thing we haven't mentioned is Nick Bosa might not be available because he's in concussion protocol now. Yeah. You can think of concussion protocol the way you think of these not happening Omicron tests.
Look, Nick Bosa and his tapioca brain are going to be out there. It's
probably
like,
probably. How? What about? I don't know a lot about Werner. They're leading tackle.
He hurt his ankle
last game.
It's a low ankle sprain.
I know he's coming back, but like, what is he, a difference maker? Or is he just a guy with a bunch of tackles?
He is. Yeah, he's a difference maker. Matt, you were going to say he's a difference maker too, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that. So in Acme Packing Company, we have a film guy. His name is Rich Madrid. Rich is actually a Niners fan, and so he's a film guy for the Niners first. And he thought it was absolutely asinine that Fred Warner got zero All-Pro votes. He claims that he had a better year than the guy for the Colts, Leonard.
Darius Leonard, yeah. And
yeah, he claims that Fred Warner is better than Darius Leonard this year.
If you look at the 49ers splits, you can see Fred Warner's impact on the game. It is very, very much a Levante David kind of impact, where that middle of the field kind of yak just disappears against them. That's why you have to beat them outside, and that's why their secondary not being as good is such a huge deal, because it opens up a vulnerability that wasn't there 2 years ago. But they do clean up messes in the middle, and if Fred Warner's out, it's a big deal, because that gives the Packers another avenue to attack them. But I don't think he will be. I think he'll be shot up and ready to go in cold weather.
He's already said he's going to be good to go. So that's not a concern. I just didn't know how big of a deal. I mean, that's part of why Dallas was able to stick around in that game, is that both Bosa and Werner were out for the latter stages of that game. So that does say something.
By the way, I just looked it up. Do you know what game Aaron Rodgers ran for over 65?
Oh, no. I want to know. What was it?
Giants 2011.
No way.
That game?
Yeah.
Oof.
Okay. That game was awful. What an awful game.
His next highest rushing in the playoffs is for 46 against the Falcons in the NFC Championship.
Yeah, all right. That's the game I thought it was the game where they were way behind.
And then his next highest is 39 against the Bears in the NFC Championship.
That one does not surprise me. He did a lot of scrambling in that game.
39 yards and one tackle. Better scenario for 2022, JD asks. Rodgers stays, but you can't afford Devontae and have to cut a lot of other talent due to the cap. Or you trade Rodgers, get all that draft capital, start Love, keep Devontae, and don't have to cut as much talent. There's no real option to keep Rodgers and Adams, right? To which I'd push back. There is a scenario. It's just you've pushed things down the road, and the payback is greater in the next couple years. But they could do that. They could do it.
Yep. First of all, everybody should follow Ken Engels on Twitter, who just updates cap stuff like immediately. And you can keep both of them. It just has a significant cost to depth and other people on the team and the future
also,
cap.
You don't keep one.
Yeah, I don't. Matt's right about that too. I mean, taking your question at face value, you should keep Rodgers if you can. In this scenario where Devontae's gone, you still want Rodgers because he still gives you your best chance. I don't think that the Love Adams connection works very well next year personally, but if you keep Rodgers, you're keeping both. That's how this is going to work. You're going to sacrifice a lot of future, but you're keeping both or none, and that's the real choice. But yeah, I would keep Rodgers because I don't think that their current backup quarterback's very good personally. So that's what I would do.
All right, Darren Jones asks, among the Packers players that have recently returned from injury, who is likely to have the largest impact? Everybody's back.
We get asked this question once a week.
I know, and then they don't actually end up playing, or Bakhtiari's in there for like two series. We haven't seen Alexander on the field. We haven't seen, obviously, Zadarius. And now Whitney Merciless
out of nowhere.
we should just say Whitney Merciless because we're so stunned that he's actually there.
A secret big deal because he is a very good run-stopping player. And if people start to lose gap contain amongst the current edge rushers, he can come in as that situational guy.
Yeah. Gary.
yes. So it's actually very useful to have Whitney Mercilus, but if Jair Alexander's back, I still think the answer is him. The 49ers can push your depth with their receiving options pretty well, and I think that the Packers having the Douglas Stokes-Alexander combination just makes them a force that they weren't before. So I still go with that, but they're all good to have back.
Yeah. It's like, hey man, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Exactly.
It's like, I just really like ice cream. So tangential, the mention of Rashawn Gary losing edge contained. A bit of a point of contention among Twitter, I think it was like last week. I was complaining about name searchers. I think name searching is a bad thing. Rashawn Gary, noted name searcher. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go after people who tag him. He just finds people who talk about him and blocks them.
Okay.
I was told that, oh, it's self-care and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, like he spent draft night searching for his name and blocking people that said bad things about him. That's not self-care. That's narcissism.
So it's something.
You're not wrong. Yeah. But also, if you're going to put stuff out into a public sphere that's critical of a certain player and that player's sure. name isn't John Smith, and therefore it's very difficult to search.
Maybe he has a guy. Maybe he's got a guy who just said, take 3 hours and go on Twitter and find everybody.
Man, he is his own agent. You think he has someone running his social media?
I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think I hear what you're saying. I think it would certainly, if I were a pro athlete, and Lord knows I am nowhere in the same hemisphere as one, it would be to my benefit, my mental health benefit, to not be paying attention and not be seeking that stuff out. Because if you want to find crap about you, you're probably going to be able to find it, no questions asked. But it's their prerogative. If they want to do it, it wouldn't be my choice. Yeah. But if they want to do it, that is absolutely their call. All right, Jason Spitz, your Kyle Shanahan, lay out your recipe for beating the Packers Saturday night. This is my favorite type of question. Give me the scenario where it goes wrong.
Let the Packers take a small lead and start running too much.
The Packers take a lead, they're going to win this game.
Yeah, this is what the mini pod is. So the answer is do a lot of lateral running at Rashawn Gary's side. See if you can capitalize on it. It's a weakness of his. So see if you can capitalize on that. Make Gary slow down his pass rush by making him stick in his spot, by making that happen. And just use Kittle in a lot of different ways. Get him matched up on smaller players and throw him the ball and rely on him getting yak. Push down the middle if he happens to get a linebacker on him, which should not happen. But even if he gets Darnell Savage on him, I would test Darnell Savage with Kittle deep anytime that matchup props up, and I think that is a creatable matchup. Other than that, I would just make Debo a safety valve throw basically every time. If I were the Packers, I would have Alexander shadowing Debo Samuel pretty much the whole game if he plays. Kittle is your, I think, ticket to victory plus running. And it's really simple as that. On defense, that's harder because they have a weakness in defending the deep pass. I would probably try and dare Aaron Rodgers to complete as much underneath as possible and hope he gets impatient. I guess. I don't know. That's tougher. It's kind of hoping the Packers are stupid, and I don't think they will be. But they have a path through their offense for sure.
Tim Braun asks, how did Sterling Sharp get a video game? His gregarious personality.
Because 90s. I mean,
I looked for receivers with a video game, and the only ones out there are Sterling Sharp's, and Jerry Rice has one with his dog, and that's really it.
Jerry Rice dog football for the Nintendo Wii.
Yep.
It's awful.
That is a real game. I tried to research this. There's no writing or literature on Sterling Sharp end to end. And it is a terrible football game. It does not have the NFL license, obviously. So it has 30 teams and two all-star teams with no player names. It is famous for having a very large playbook for the time, but it's a bad game. So I'm guessing somebody went to Sterling Sharp and said, we'll pay you $1 million to have your name on this game. And that's how that went. Simple as that.
In that era, if you wanted a receiver, there weren't many choices. Like, there just weren't many electric wide receivers.
I'm surprised.
It was a Japanese developer that didn't know anything
about
football.
Matt is also right about that. It was a Japanese developer. It was an exclusively American release from a Japanese-developed football game, which is never a good sign. I think, like, I'm surprised Michael Irvin doesn't have one. I could have seen that. But I don't, like, Andre Rison maybe could have had for a while before things went south on him. I don't know. Maybe not.
Those are some personalities for sure. Yeah.
So I'm looking through the Super Famicom releases by the people who made Sterling Sharp end to end.
Yeah. What's the company?
The
Jalico, right?
It's
Tose. Tose sucks. They're one of the worst developers of all time.
Tose is pretty good at making fighting games. They made some pretty good Dragon Ball Z fighting games that we did not see in the U.S. because Dragon Ball Z didn't pick up until later.
Yep.
They also made the Black Box tennis game for the Super Nintendo.
That's actually a decent tennis game. The Black Box tennis game is pretty good.
So they made Super Tennis. They also made Super Bases Loaded.
They must do some Jalico stuff because that's their game.
Made a Super Play Action Football, which I believe is
just really quick. Super Play Action Football is the Super Nintendo conversion of the Nintendo's first 4-player game, and it is just terrible. It's awful.
I don't even think that the end-to-end football had like a season mode, right? Like
it did
just
not have a season mode. You could only play one game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awful. So what the hell?
Bad game.
There you go.
I have a copy of it arriving shortly because you can get it for like $2. So we will do a let's play.
I have multiple Brett Favre quarterback clubs for the N64.
Very nice. So. All right. We've spent far too much time on Sterling Sharp end-to-end. Let's move on.
I will say,
if we spent more time than you would playing it.
As listeners know, I don't do video games. It's just not for me. And I will say, if I had a video game question, I would absolutely come to you two guys. I feel like you know as much as anybody.
The game came out in like 1994. Like it was during the heyday of when you were probably wearing flannel and like really angsty about things.
Yeah, I wasn't ever angsty or wearing flannel. I just listened to grunge. Yeah.
There's also an only Japanese video game based on Major League, the movie, that was never released in America. So I also
Sounds amazing.
I've tried to buy it. I tried to buy it during the first part of the pandemic, and they couldn't ship it over from Japan. So I'm gonna try again soon.
Oh, I can help you with that.
Well, now stuff's making it now. It's fine. I want a cart. I'll get a cart. It's fine.
From video games to questionable humor, yep. So we're staying in the Matub vein here. Philly Joel Osment asks, what's the defensive game plan look like for containing Debo? Also, is A Chandon-Sized Hole the greatest title for a Packers-themed erotic novel, or can Matub do better? That's a good question.
Probably good, but not off the top of my head. Goddamn.
Well, you think about it. And Debo is really just about discipline. He is mostly a lateral threat. He's good in space, and he's good going side to side and then turning upfield and powering through smaller guys. So it's just really about staying in your gap, keeping your gap integrity, and tackling him well. He's a yak machine. Debo usually will not beat you over the top. Every once in a while, he will get loose deep. But usually, he's catching the ball in front of you. So it's just a matter of staying in your lane and being a sure tackler on him and not taking any stupid chances. They were very good at this in the first game. They did a very nice job containing Debo Samuel. He had 2 runs for 0 yards, which he usually is. He averages like 10 yards a carry. So they can do it. It is just a matter of not getting overly excited and not doing anything stupid. Then you can keep Debo in check.
PJ Vessels asks, over under 6.5 points for the Packers in the first quarter. Is starting fast important for this team? 13-4 would say no, but this is the playoffs.
It's important.
Yeah, start fast. It's
important against the 49ers. You want to be ahead of this team because they get weaker as they get farther behind. The more Garoppolo has to throw it on field, the worse they are, and the more they can run the ball and do their slower offense, the better they are. So you don't want to be playing catch-up against them. They have good pass rushers. They have Nick Bosa. You want to ideally be dominant, you know, in charge of the game. So it is important. You don't want to fall behind here. Now, that said, Kyle Shanahan sucks at keeping leads, so if you fall behind, it's not like you should turn off the TV. They can come back, but it's easier to beat the 49ers and less stressful if you just get a lead on them. They kind of wilt.
On the topic of Nick Bosa, have you guys heard of the Tone Setters?
No.
Is that a cappella group?
The Tone Setters is a Twitter page that is comedy, but people don't know that. And so they would post a picture of Nick Bosa with like a quote, air quotes, quote that sounded very bad, and a lot of blue checks thought it was a legit quote.
No.
Oh no! That can sometimes be called libel. It's parody sometimes.
It was,
but...
so it, like, it says in their header that it's parody.
Okay, fine.
Like, this is a parody account, not to be taken seriously, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, they were like, you know, Nick Bosa said, when you're playing a quarterback like Dak, it makes you bring the pain or something like that.
By the way,
we were like, Jesus.
I will take the over on 6.5 points. I think that one of Aaron's faults in the first quarter is often taking deep shots when he shouldn't, but that works against the 49ers. So I will bet that they hit a deep shot in the first quarter and score 7. So yeah, over.
I'm going to take the under.
All right.
I'm taking the over. All right, Danny Noonan, one of our favorites. If a team were to wear Moon Knight themed alternate uniforms the way the Packers sometimes wear Dr. Fate themed alternates, which team would it be? Maybe Raiders based on color scheme and multiple personality disorder. This is a reference to the Moon Knight trailer, the new Marvel movie, Marvel series, I should say, that dropped during the Monday night playoff game between the Cardinals and Rams. All right.
I think Cowboys is where I'd go there. They sort of have that faded moonlight look a little bit more than the Raiders do, in my opinion. So
I'm going Colts.
That's a good call. I like the Colts.
Yeah, Colts.
Yeah.
Because that like slate gray thing. Or the Lions. I think the Lions already have a color rush that sort of looks like that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that too.
So,
all right, there you go. Covered the gamut.
Here you go, Danny.
On to Twitter questions. Jonathan Deal asks, is Jimmy being injured actually bad for the Packers because it incentivizes the Niners to take the ball out of his hands more?
So I like your question. And I like the thought process behind it. And normally, in this kind of scenario, I would say maybe yes. But the 49ers, I think, are very aware of their quarterback limitations and are perfectly willing to take the ball out of his hands when it suits them. I mean, like we were just talking about, we lost a game to this team where a perfectly healthy Jimmy Garoppolo completed 6 passes, and they ran for 200 yards. If they're running for 10 yards a clip, they're not going to have Jimmy throw, healthy or not healthy. So I don't really think it does. Kyle's smart enough to just exploit weakness, but I still like it. In dumber hands, it would actually matter, but that's not the case here.
Ryan Ziegler says, it's the week of the Bills-Packers Super Bowl. Rodgers broke his hip, sunning his derriere, and the NFL will allow him to be replaced by another quarterback from any team in the league. Who do you pick and why?
Joe Burrow.
Why Joe Burrow?
Oh, wait. No.
Patrick Mahomes.
I choose Josh Allen.
I would too. Fine. I would choose Josh Allen because then he's off the Bills.
Because then he's off the Bills.
Have to replace Josh Allen.
Yeah. There
I still take Mahomes, but for the same reason. Josh Allen is also a correct answer. That's fine. Yeah, one of those two.
Yeah, I also would take Mahomes.
I really like Joe Burrow.
Joe Rob asks, who will be the one player that we are excited to see return that will not play this, that will not play this weekend? So who's gonna be the tease?
Zadarius, I think. Whitney Merciless maybe too, but I think Zadarius. He's been a tease all season, so I won't believe it till I see it.
Look, yeah. If Cam Akers can come back in the same season from an Achilles tear and then tear it up against...
That was insane. So many drugs.
Well, just one.
One drug. Lots of one drug.
Then Merciless can come back from a partial bicep tear.
Yeah.
So there's actually there's a guy who quit his job to become a TikTok influencer, which is a sentence that's real in 2022.
Yeah.
Had a double bicep tear doing an ego lift in his garage. He was attempting to do a strict straight bar preacher curl, which is the single worst thing you can do for your bicep tendon, tore both biceps. He had these like bionic arm things that so he could use his arm, and he had like this brace that had like springs in it and stuff. It was really neat.
That's
cool. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that with Merciless, so he could use his arm better.
Okay. I have nothing.
Science. Yes, science.
All right, PJ's Equinemius St. Brown Stan account. This game would seem ideal for Heflin, our favorite trash can full of dirt. We have not heard from Jack Heflin much this year. What are the chances that he plays? Activating him to solidify the line versus the run in the cold weather would be a good plan, in my opinion.
They're low. I think the higher chance that we have getting Kiki back,
yeah,
the less chance you have of seeing Heflin.
I think that. I also think that the sort of up the middle is not the place where you want to concentrate your run stopping in this game. And I think Kenny's probably sufficient, but some extra heft is probably warranted, yes. You don't want to get beaten north-south, and the 49ers can do that as well. So, again, like the thought process, but I think also Kingsley Kiki is more likely to see the field.
Did you guys see the traditional 4-3 front that the Packers put up against the Lions?
Yes, I did. Mostly because
Do you think it was a test?
I think everything's a test when you are playing a practice game against the Lions, and it worked pretty well. Right. So if I won't be surprised if it shows up for sure. Yeah.
All right. PJ also asks, and then with Cobb being back, deactivating Amari and having David Moore return kicks would be solid in my mind.
If they don't have J-Mon. David Moore returning kicks, then they deserve to get just torn up.
They protected David Moore this week.
They
did. Practice squad. So.
Yes. They're smart. Expect, they'll do it.
Expect David Moore.
Yeah.
Brett Smith, just wondering if you guys got to the bottom of whether or not cover 6 exists.
Matt, do you want to explain this one really quick?
So I already talked about Rich earlier in the podcast. Yeah. Rich was arguing with a 49ers fan who was like super pro Jimmy. Rich hates Jimmy. He thinks that Trey is the future, but Shanahan doesn't want to start him because he's super inexperienced.
He's very bad, anyway, by the way. But
this guy straight up said cover 6 does not exist because it would be 6 DBs dropping back and each playing a sixth of the field. He was immediately told, like, no, cover 6 is quarter half because it's cover 2 plus cover 4.
Yeah.
I.e. cover 6. And then this guy's like, nah, that's just a variation on cover 3. And we're like, nah, man, like, look, it exists. It's in playbooks. Like, people call it.
Rich Madrid.
It's called cover 6.
Rich, to his credit, went and found like an actual piece of paper from an actual playbook from an actual football team that had the label of cover 6 on it.
Oh, it was a Nick Saban playbook.
It was a Nick Saban playbook. And he had like the actual physical copy of it and took a picture of it and put it on there. So as good of evidence as you could possibly have. Which is
incredible
great.
Stuff.
So, yes. Josh from okay. Why am I blanking on Josh's last name right now?
I have no idea because I don't
Norman.
Josh Cohen.
Josh Cohen. That was hilarious.
Josh Cohen is a producer over at NFL CBS.
Yes.
Josh Cohen, shout outs to Josh. He's the reason that Tony Romo stopped saying Jar Alexander.
Yeah. But anyway, this guy who was getting in this fight with Rich said that he would give somebody $10,000 if they could find 100 examples of cover 6 being played in the league. And
he found 100 examples in 2 weeks.
He did.
Like in the last 2 weeks.
In the last 2 weeks of football, he found 100 examples. Josh Cohen found 100, and he put him up there. So
awesome.
That was fun, too.
Still hasn't been paid his $10,000.
Well, yes. He's not going
Damn to. Shame. Yep. Damn shame.
All right,
way Paul pronounces Jair's name, I always feel like he's addressing me. Jair, it's very close to JR.
JR. Yeah, okay. I got to work on that because you're right about that. I just said it.
I don't mind. I would love to be Jair Alexander. Okay, so let's see. I love both handles here. It's old man on a bike in Shirlington at Real Betty the Pug. Some stories there, I have to think. So does Z re-injure his ego and sit out the game if he is not in the starting lineup?
It's a good question because he doesn't deserve to be in the starting lineup and won't be in the starting lineup and will be a backup. And I don't think Zedarius likes things like that. But
yeah, I think he's going to be on a pitch count.
But he's had a lot. He's coming back new and he's had time to think about this. So they can also be plausibly, there's some deniability here. They can all be like, Zedarius, we'd love to start you, but we got to get you back into football shape. So yeah, you're going to just do play. So I think he plays if he can go, but he's a weirdo who's been out all year. So who knows?
Yeah, I think I saw 25 snaps would be kind of the very, very top end of what you could expect from him is sort of what the backups are soaking up without, when they're not out there. All right.
Imagine having an all pro pass rusher as your backup.
Yeah. Nice. On a 25. Yeah. And not only that, but he's like one of 4 all pros that are coming back for your playoff run. Yeah. It's wild. Not all pros, but still Pro Bowl caliber players. Discord McSchlubbin. Is Zedarius Smith any better at contain or setting the edge than Rashawn Gary, or is his return bigger deal mostly for depth?
So he is better at setting the edge than Rashawn Gary, and he is also a bigger deal mostly for depth. Zedarius is actually, when he's right and playing well, he is a great all-around player. He's a good pass rusher, he's a good run defender, and he's good at setting the edge. He is better. Rashawn Gary is great at getting upfield, but he does lose that contain. Zedarius is better at it, but he's not going to play that much, and that is a role that might pop up in this game because that's an important part of this game. But he is there for depth. He's going to be a backup, and we'll see if his role pops up. Matt is laughing for some reason that I don't understand.
I just saw the next question.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't. Were we talking about Bush albums at some point?
Yes, Jerry, yes, we were.
I said Bush sucks wholesale, and then you got real mad.
Oh yeah, because that's a terrible take. Jerry Eldred. First of all, Bush's first four albums, Hold Up and Razorblade Suitcase, is a masterpiece. As for my actual question, is Nathaniel Hackett actually head coach material? He just seems like a guy to me, so I find all these interviews strange. First of all, Razorblade Suitcase was my doorway into Bush. I listened to that album before 16 Stone. I love that album. It's not a masterpiece. It is extraordinarily top heavy. It is six songs, and then it is a bunch of other songs. The first three songs...
That is an album.
You just described every album ever.
Yeah, it is not. That is not a masterpiece. That is just an album that has six good songs and then a bunch of other songs. However, the top three, Personal Holloway, Greedy Fly, and Swallowed, are as good as any stretch of three songs on any album in the quote-unquote grunge era, and I absolutely will go to bat for that. I do love Razorblade Suitcase. It's just that I only love half of it. Is Nathaniel Hackett actually head coach material? He just seems like a guy to me, so I find all these interviews strange.
So the answer is no.
I think
he
is.
No one knows, really. You never know. When you have an offensive play caller as your head coach, you never know what the other guy is actually responsible for, how good they might be. It's very hard to tell. Sometimes it works out really well, like with Frank Reich from the Eagles. Sometimes it doesn't. So... we don't know what Nathaniel Hackett is actually responsible for. He has a good reputation, but no idea. Could go anyway.
Well, that's like, okay, so some of the names that you're hearing coming up this cycle, like Jared Mayo, like the Patriots linebacker coach, is getting a lot of interviews, and a lot of people are like, that's a really good interview. And over here, like, he coaches linebackers for the Patriots. So it's just, we don't know. We don't know how it works around the league. We hated the Joe Barry hire.
Yep. All true.
I do need to point out that the seventh song on Razorblade Suitcase is also is Mouth. That's good, but the deconstructed version is better.
Yeah.
That's better. So, like, they released a better version of that song later.
No.
But still. It's a good album. It's just not a masterpiece.
I'm just sad I can't use my gateway into Bush as the episode title. I don't think APC would let me do it.
I didn't mean for it to be quite the double entendre it turned out to be, but it's pretty great.
You could put it in the deck.
It might be in the deck. We'll see. We'll see what I can sneak in.
God, those top three songs, like, they are electric in my mind. I think we're done. That's all the questions we have.
We're done. Yep.
We could definitely talk more about Sterling Sharp video games, though, and late 90s rock albums. We could definitely do a lot more of that.
Totally. But we're not going to. So,
is Razorblade Suitcase late 90s?
96, yeah. 97.
It's
That's
fine,
late 90s.
I literally only know them for Glycerine and Machine Head.
Yes, those are both on 16 Stone, which is a borderline masterpiece. I would almost say that is a masterpiece. And I like Golden State too. Jerry, I love Bush's first four albums. They're good albums.
You celebrate the whole catalog.
I celebrate the entire Bush catalog.
Now we're just making too many 90s references.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Before we go and get on a tangent about 90s rock more, JR, do you have anything to plug at the JR?
Well, it is the Packers have a playoff game this week. As you may have heard, and we got lots and lots of content at jsonline.com. You know, pretty much everything Tom Silverstein writes is interesting. I love it. It's always a unique angle that I hadn't thought of. So hit him, Ryan Wood, Cassidy Hill, Pete Doherty, obviously they've got tons of great stuff, but I'm busy too. I've got a big rundown of the coldest games in Lambeau Field history. Outside chance we get into that level of cold on Saturday, but I don't think it's going to quite hit that depth. Also a rundown of all the playoff games in Aaron Rodgers' career, which we just did a quiz about, which is maybe partly why I was equipped to do okay on that. I'm thinking we're going to put together a list of the 25 best playoff plays in Packers history, not just Aaron Rodgers' era, but overall. I did something similar last year with the 30 greatest single game performances in Packers playoff history. So just having some fun with it, just doing all, there's just so much stuff to write about and talk about and think about, and you know, all Rodgers' connections to San Francisco, obviously, kind of summarizing that stuff. And it's a fun time for me. I get to do a lot of cool stuff like this. So it's all Packers all the time at this point.
Very
but
nice.
But are you trending?
Am I trending?
JR is always trending, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe after some of my comments about grunge, we'll see what happens. But I'm gonna guess not. I'm going to guess my dig into the past doesn't quite move the needle across the board.
Yep. So, Matt, I know you're going to the game because I'm also
I fly into Milwaukee at 11:40 on Saturday. So I'm going straight from there to Lambeau.
Oh, are we? I thought we were going to hang out, Matub.
I thought so, too. But so actually, I had to change my flight. I was going to fly into Appleton Saturday afternoon. But once it was announced it was a Saturday game, I had to change airports.
Yep.
So I'm flying into Milwaukee. I'm getting picked up in Milwaukee. Steve at Appleton Coffee is picking me up, hosting me, and providing my ticket.
Wow. That is bold. I am also going to the game, but not with
yes!
Steve's a season ticket holder. So.
Nice. Very nice. I'm going to freeze my butt off at this game. I was expecting this to be a Sunday game. So I was spending a lot of time planning it to be a Sunday game. That was a Saturday night game, but whatever. We'll make it work.
Excuse me, Mr. Saturday games are awesome.
Not 7 o'clock. Make it 3. That's perfect.
You were just last week on this podcast like, oh man, so Saturday games are great.
It's better to have a Saturday 7 o'clock game than a Sunday 7 o'clock game. But it's January. Make it during the day. Give people time to enjoy the post game at a reasonable hour. That's better. So, but it's fine.
So you're going to the game. Tub is going to the game. My sister is going to the game, and I will be at home watching her twin 7-month-olds. They will be hanging out with Uncle JR all day long. I'll probably be writing too, so it's gonna be a real adventure. Yeah. But I don't know who's gonna have it worse. You guys freezing your butts off in the stands, or me with the twin babies? But I kind of like where I'm sitting. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not a cold guy, so you know.
I know how to get equipped for these, so I'll be fine. Not a problem. But Matt, let's try and grab a beer if we can. And
absolutely,
yeah, cool. As for plugs for me, I got my Shepherd Express column going up shortly. I'm going to write something about the 49ers later this week that I haven't figured out yet. I'm definitely going to sim this game. So, there'll be a Tecmo sim for this one later on. I've got cool new fancy capture equipment to actually, record the game. So I'll put that up on YouTube and we'll see who wins in Tecmo Bowl, as well. So that will do it for us. Everybody enjoy the game on Saturday. It should be a good and fun one. And we'll be back next week, win or lose, hopefully win, to preview the game, hopefully not against the Buccaneers.